now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Hello and welcome to Shout Out. I'm Andy Shilton.
And I'm Laura Lanamy. It's a hot topic, that of gender, sex and justice. Today we dive deep into those topics.
Dr. Joe Hartland is here live in the studio to discuss these issues.
Ooh, and Ez is back, yes, with another quiz story.
Quiz-story.
Especially for Black History Month.
All that right here today on Shout Out.
Dum dum dum. Hey, chorus. I wish I was blessed with a voice. Like, I was blessed with a voice. I sound like a tone deaf rat, but like.
Well, you only have to go to dum 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 on
that. I know that.
Or if you're Steph, you do it with a Bristolian accent.
I don't even know how you do that.
Do you know, I've never heard tone deaf rat ever.
Don't. It was coming out of my mouth very fast. I couldn't think of what.
I couldn't think.
I was like a strangled cat. Like, I was going to go for that, but I wasn't thinking about a strangled cat. So I thought tone deaf rat. There you go.
That's a new one.
Yeah, well, I'm a gutter. Well, no, let's not go there.
And how was the holiday?
It was good. Yeah, we had some showers down there, but it was, really good. And we got remembered by a lot of the staff down there and welcomed us back. Lake Garda. We stayed at a town called Pesquera, but my second home is Sirmione.
These are words.
What
country?
Italy.
Ooh, ooh la la, mademoiselle.
I like Italy. I haven't been to Italy.
Okay, mademoiselle. No, that's not even that. God, I'm still in today.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno. Bella. Bella.
Bella. Bella. Just say that.
Yeah, because Steffi is Bella.
Oh, we don't sound like we're taking the piss at all, do we?
No, absolutely not. I don't know.
Next you're just going to say, because I went to France, you go, oh, good morning.
Good morning?
They'll get the reference.
Yeah, hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Oh, God. Is this something in the 60s,
70s? Absolute genius.
The amount that's just flown over my head.
Exactly.
Honestly,
us young ones. Us drinking from the fountain of youth still.
If you've never seen Hello, Hello,
no, I have seen Hello, Hello.
Because the police officer trying to speak French is genius.
No, I do like Hello, Hello. It's just there's a lot of them. So,
oh wait, it's not a movie.
No,
it was a series.
Sorry, so much I know.
It was written by the same people who wrote things like "I Being Served" and "It Ain't Half Hot, Mom."
Not a clue. Keep on going. Give me some more.
they were that classic old school. I mean, the most modern equivalent to it, a comedy style, would probably be Mrs. Brown's Boy.
See, I'm familiar with that game.
It's that real tongue-in-cheek humour type thing.
I went to a fancy dress party while that series was running. As one of the maids. Yeah.
One of the maids? What were you cleaning?
Well, it was before I transitioned full-time, so it was a bit reckless of me.
It was on a part-time job.
And I got some unwanted attention.
That did you have your legs out?
It's space where you got the broom from, though, doesn't it?
It does.
Fun around town in that one.
We did a bit of Halloween stuff last week.
We
had Halloween
spooky
books,
stuff.
Didn't we?
And it's spooky season coming. Now. It's October.
It is. It's tis the season. It's my favorite. I feel like Halloween is gay Christmas.
Well, that's what we said last week.
Don't be listening that already. Sorry.
Sorry, did you not listen to the show last week, Laura?
Oh.
I'm an avid.
But we have to listen to you after you've done a show.
You don't have to. You want to.
You tell us we must.
Yeah, well, I mean. Listen to excellence once again. Why not? Like, I know. It's the one time I can actually wear an outfit that's slightly risque and no one can really say anything to me. And I love that.
You're on the radio?
No.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah, in Halloween.
Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about being on air.
No. I mean, I'm in a risque outfit now. I'm not, guys. I'm very much suited in boots.
What was it Lucy called it?
boom hammock. I frequently have boom hammocks.
Yes.
It was a good top. So,
been a gay man and like really close friends. It's not something I really pay that much attention to, but I've never laughed so much in my life when Lucy said that. And she was so embarrassed after she said it too, wasn't she?
I was like, you know, I mean, that's another thing to call my. I'm now referring to my tops as boob hammocks.
All the time.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a shout out line that's going to be up there with the outtakes, isn't it?
100%. Now, my bras are booby prisons. So there you go. Like, it's all part of it.
So now, it's different if you're in the States, because in the States at the moment it's LGBT History Month.
Indeed.
But here, it's a certain month too, isn't it?
Yeah, we swap them. So our LGBT plus History Month is in February, and our Black History Month is in October. But you know, they do it the opposite way around.
So, and we're really on the ball here. This is what, the 2nd of October,
it
and
is. We're on it.
We've got a queerstory from the lovely Ez. Should we have a listen?
Yeah, go on then.
Hello and welcome to Queerstory, where today I will be talking to you about Black History Month. Since 1987, the UK has celebrated Black History Month, a time that is dedicated to remembering the contributions to our country's history by people from African and Caribbean heritage. October 1st, 2022 marks the beginning of Black History Month, one of the most prominent cultural celebrations of the year. It is a time to educate and enrich the world with the importance of Black history. People from African and Caribbean backgrounds have been fundamental parts of British history for centuries. However, campaigners believe that their value and contribution to society is often overlooked, ignored, and distorted. History books have often purposely chosen to not share the very important stories of those from the Black and Asian communities, which acts as a constant reminder that our country has a rich and diverse cultural heritage. Most schools still teach a history curriculum which focuses on the traditional events and the achievements of white figures. Black History Month gives everyone the opportunity to share, celebrate, and understand the impact of Black heritage and culture. More recently, greater attention has been paid to the importance of the Windrush generation and the Black Lives Matter movement, especially since the death of George Floyd in May 2020. Black History Month originated in the USA more than 90 years ago and was first brought to the UK in the 1980s. It was initially introduced to the country by a member of the Greater London Council, Akiaba Adai Sebo. Since 1987, Black History Month has been celebrated annually in the UK to help eradicate discrimination and encourage racial equality. So why is Black History Month so important? Well, studies reveal that 60% of Black professionals still experience racism in the workplace. So a key motivator behind Black History Month is to highlight how people from such communities have made pivotal contributions to society. It's also been reported that 25% of people find that assumptions are made about their abilities, character, and/or behaviour due to their race. And recent statistics showed that the majority of hate crimes within the UK were race hate crimes, accounting for around 3/4 of offences. That's 72%. These numbers continue to increase annually, and so again emphasise the importance of Black History Month, as the event brings to light how Black people are both uncredited in our history books and undervalued in the workplace. So let's go back to where it all began and discover the story of Black History Month. In 1915, a 39-year-old American historian with a PhD from Harvard University, only the second African-American to earn a Harvard doctorate degree, establishes the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History. The mission of the organization was to promote, research, preserve, interpret, and disseminate information about Black life, history, and culture to the global community. His name was Dr. Carter G. Woodson, a son of a former slave, who is now often referred to as the father of Black history. In 1916, he founded the Journal of Negro History to help promote Black history, which he felt was all often too overlooked, ignored, and even suppressed by the writers of history textbooks and the teachers who used them. Woodson, above most, knew the importance of education and believed it was key to reducing racial prejudices in his country. In 1926, Woodson and the ASNLH sponsored National Negro History Week, the precursor to Black History Month, with the main purpose of encouraging this history to be taught in the country's public schools. It took time for the week to gain people's attention. Woodson created pamphlets and educational materials to help promote the event. And by the 40s, the week-long celebrations had begun to attract larger audiences. The civil rights movement of the 60s helped grow Negro History Week into Black History Month, which reportedly started to take place on college campuses, with the first month taking place in 1970. And 6 years later, with schools and community centres across the country honouring the month, it was officially recognised by President Gerald Ford. It would take a further 11 years before it came to the UK and was stirred up by the identity crisis that many Black British children faced. Akiaba Adaisebo, a Ghanaian activist and coordinator for special projects for the Greater London Council, along with Ken Livingstone, the then leader of the GLC, brought the American annual celebration to the London area. The month chosen was October to coincide with the start of the new academic year, a deliberate decision to help maximise engagement in the minds of Black British children and also instil in them a sense of identity and pride. When Black History Month first started in the UK, there was a big focus on Black American history, and over time there has been more attention on Black British history and key Black figures from the UK, such as Walter Toll, the first Black officer to command white troops in the British Army and one of English football's first Black players. Mallory Blackman, a best-selling author and the first Black children's laureate. Olive Morris, a social activist who co-founded groups such as the Organisation of Women of African and Asian Descent and the Brixton Black Women's Group. Dr. Shirley Thompson, the first woman in Europe to conduct and compose a symphony within the last 40 years. And Lewis Hamilton, one of the most high-profile competitors in Formula One and the only Black driver. Black History Month is also celebrated in the community in places such as museums, care homes and workplaces. A broad range of topics are covered, from Britain's colonial past to migration and music. In 2022, the UK will see thousands of events across the country, from exhibitions to workshops, seminars and theatre productions. Although the event originated from the States and came with a heavy focus on American Black history, it has gradually become more British-centric, with many events this year focusing on the theme of Windrush, the story of hundreds of Caribbean settlers who came to the UK 70 years ago. The man who started it all, Carter G. Woodson, passed away in 1950, before Negro History Week became Black History Month. Although he would have been glad to see the event grow to what it is today, celebrated across multiple countries, his original goal of incorporating Black history into mainstream education remains the driving force behind the month's continued existence. Perhaps one day the need for an annual celebration will no longer be required, when Black history is universally accepted as British history and is studied and celebrated year-long around the country. I'd like to bring this quizzery to a close by sharing these quotes. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken winged bird that cannot fly. Langston Hughes. Somebody once said, we never know what is enough until we know what's more than enough. Billie Holiday. There are two ways of exerting one's strength. One is pushing down, the other is pulling up. Brooker T. Washington. Each person must live their life as a model for others. Rosa Parks. And lastly, never underestimate the power of dreams and the influence of the human spirit. We are all the same in this notion. The potential for greatness lives within each of us. Wilma Rudolph, the first American woman to win 3 gold medals at a single Olympic Games.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Oh, that was a submission, that one.
That was very good.
That was giving me like a little bit of Ibiza vibes.
Yeah, so I was shaking.
For the hammock.
I feel like Wayne Lineker in the corner.
Tight hammock.
Yeah, literally. Dun, dun, dun. It was a sparkler in the drink, guys.
Do you want to tell us about that? So that was a submission, wasn't it?
It was, from Seho. I hope I've pronounced that correctly. It's the first track that's just been released now from an album that's going to be released early 2026.
So did you say Canadian?
Toronto.
Toronto.
Hello. What's the album called? What's the album called?
What's one? It's the first single is called Euphoric Red.
Woo!
It is euphoric, isn't it?
It is. Okay.
The cover is very sexy. Very trance,
it is sexy. Very trance, it's giving. It's giving. It's giving.
There's actually a video to that track on YouTube, so go and have a look.
Check it out.
I love getting like talent like that that you've not really heard about before.
Yeah. There's a lot of talent in the queer world.
Oh yeah, tons. Bad.
We do get a lot of submissions. Very nice.
Well,
I mean, the with the greatest respect to those that send them, some of them are awful, but there are some really good ones.
You can't say that to our listeners.
Yeah, but they don't know which ones. So it's all personal preference.
That is true. But sometimes the things you pick are questionable, Andy. So I don't really rate your taste.
They're professional artists, you know. I mean, I'm still waiting for you to submit some songs one week.
I will, but then I don't know. I'm so high on my horse that I can't. I don't really.
You don't like anything.
No. Isn't the fact that like I don't want you to come back with your opinion because I want you know
that I won't like it and I've been doing this
no I actually
and...
do need to give you some like
well hold on because we do have some good music later on so I feel like we all kind of mutually understanding the couple songs
and I'm playing for everyone
exactly
it's not just what we want
okay but some news GAY has closed down
in London
unfortunately Jeremy Jones
Joseph.
He put a post on Instagram explaining everything.
It was one of the most famous clubs in London. It used to be a place called the Astoria, which was a converted theatre.
They had GAY late, and then they've closed that, and now it's GAY. So it's like two of the venues now. Just Heaven just exists.
It's a shame because it's actually what's indicative of what's happening across the board. Is like LGBT clubs and spaces have become restricted because people aren't going out as much or they're not enjoying them as much.
What do you think? I mean, because you two are a lot younger than us. Youngsters don't drink a lot.
Because it's just gone more and more expensive,
though. No, I don't think it's the expense. I generally think COVID changed something about our social behaviour and the fact that we no longer value drinking as a way to connect with each other
anymore.
Everybody
loves a bit of matcha.
Is that... do we?
so I hear.
Okay. but yeah, no, it's true. Like, they valued more. And I love this, like, valuing more things than drinking. Like, why is it within the gay community that the way to connect was drinking?
Yeah.
Like, I remember the party smoking and drinking was the things to, like, bring me together.
But some of that does date back to the days when it was not okay to be LGBT. And you would have a... And before the Equality Act, you could actually say this is a gay venue and exclude straight people.
Yeah.
You know, because it was... because it was okay to do things, you know, like, I mean, we used to get beat up, and also I remember when I first came out, you know, you could get fired for being gay. So by having a safe space that you could go to where someone who's likely to do that wasn't allowed in, you naturally migrated there because you knew you were safe, and you knew if you saw someone that you liked, you could actually approach them and say, do you fancy a drink? That's without them likely to punch your lights out because that
unless
was,
you're into
I'm not, straight guys don't tend to do that now. If you turn around to a straight guy and say, you know, can I buy you a drink, they say, oh, thanks mate, that's a real compliment, I'm really glad you like me, but I'm straight. But in the 90s when I came out, they just punched you. You know, so that was why we kind of migrated towards clubs and pubs and the like, because it was a safe, protected space, and you knew you were safe while you were in there.
It reminds me of like a film documentary I really recommend called Gateway Grind, and it was talking about this lesbian club in London. It was like a little bit down the stairs, and it was like a green door, and it was where they came and congregated, and it was like safe. It was a safest place for lesbians, and they had black, Asian, you know, white, all these different types of lesbians in there, and it was a place of safety. So I do understand why.
I would also say as well, I've seen so much more lesbians only like bar, well, not only obviously, but there's La Camera that was in South London, and then Coven as well, which is quickly becoming more and more. And I think perhaps it might just be that being in Soho, it's getting a lot more, like GAY was getting a lot more traffic from maybe not LGBT people. And so
the way he said the area was no longer a like LGBT area.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think that people are starting to kind of move away from Soho, and so the location in itself probably isn't.
Yeah, it's changed before, because in the early part of the 20th century, the gay area was Earl's Court, especially for the men.
I didn't know that.
And then it drifted towards Soho, and now it's all drifted down to Vauxhall, hasn't it? And other areas.
Yeah. But I also think that we're more about nights, because we don't have to own like a space, which is expensive. I think nights out are like as in specific lesbian nights or gay nights or stuff like that, or fetish nights, that's more lucrative for people than it is owning a space. Mm. But it's a shame, because then I don't feel like I have a beacon to go towards. Like I don't have somewhere that I know is safe for me.
Sounds like one we should do a whole feature on, really.
Well,
isn't
Andy, you wish.
We've got to go to
that means we'll have to go out clubbing and dancing. You think you can club and dance?
I'll be bent over. Thanks.
If he's happy to shake his booty, can we get some news from you?
While
shaking your booty.
This is Shoutout News. Welcome along. The Radical Fairies of Albion write that they have several drumming circles coming up during the period of the Hunter's Moon, which roughly equates with October and early November. Check their website for details of what's coming up. The New Age group has also issued some reminders of what LGBTQIA spiritual elders have written about our community and its relationship to the mainstream and to planetary healing. One quotation, taken from the 1980s pamphlet Two Flutes Playing, says, "Gay people have a function in a time of transition, a vital and necessary spiritual function. The weaving together of vibrations that is now called gayness is not the average pattern in the world. It is not average, but it is important. To be gay is to have a different relationship to male and female. To be gay is to have a different relationship to young and old. To be gay is to transcend other groups, political, social, ethnic, and religious. And the experiences gained from all these differences are useful to the whole of the human community." For more information, visit albionfairies.org.uk, and fairies is spelled F-A-E-R-I-E-S. Now, the bisexual hero, musician and radio presenter Tom Robinson is performing in Bristol this evening as part of his tour around Europe. A full list of gigs that he is undertaking this autumn is available at tomrobinson.com/gigs. The songwriter, whose compositions include the hit singles such as 2468 Motorway and War Baby, first came to prominence for the anthem Glad to be Gay in 1977. Robinson was for many years a presenter on the BBC Radio 6 Music Network, the Beeb's specialist and serious music station. Tom retired from Radio 6 earlier this year, but he has not given up the radio bug. He is now presenting a lighter, once fortnightly selection of new music at the digital radio station Amazing Radio, which specialises in music from unsigned artists. You can hear his new programme on Saturdays between 9 p.m. and midnight at amazingradio.com. The Australian gay magazine DNA reports that golfing legend Rory McIlroy faced repeated anti-LGBTQIA plus slurs and personal taunts at a recent tournament. The golf blog Flushing It says that the taunts were unrepeatable and totally unacceptable. Journalist Joe Beale, who was on the course with McIlroy, documented the abuse firsthand. Mr. Beale wrote that the insults have not been limited to homophobia, with other reports mentioning taunts about McIlroy's Irish heritage. The origin of the homophobic abuse was traced by DNA to online gossip that claimed McIlroy cheated on his wife, Erica Stahl, with a male caddy and used the broadcaster Amanda Balionis as a beard. Sports Keeda published and amplified that allegation and related social posts, but none of it has been substantiated. McIlroy at one point told hecklers to shut the F up and then went back to work and helped deliver Europe the trophy. After the matches, he condemned the abuse, saying the behaviour crossed the line and revealed that his wife was struck by a thrown beer as well. Europe won the Ryder Cup 15-13. LGBT Nation reports that Pete Buttigieg, who served in Joe Biden's administration, spoke in London recently at a Congress of Progressive Political Leaders. "I did not come here to tell everybody that things are better than they look. They're not," he said. "They're probably going to get worse before they get better. And yet, I'm optimistic. Not because things are better than they look, but because things have reached the point where we will have to fashion something entirely new. And we will do it on the day and this will come when Donald Trump is no longer politically active in the United States. It will happen. Journalist Abby Vasulis in the United States writes that back in 2021, an Alabama woman named Catherine doubled over in severe pain. Shortly thereafter, she woke up on her bathroom floor covered in blood and holding a stillborn baby. Upon being taken by ambulance to a local hospital, Catherine expected medical help, but instead nurses and police began seeking evidence to charge her with chemical endangerment of her unborn child. Catherine never tried to hide the fact that she had been on drugs in her system. She had admittedly been battling addiction at the time, but she also wasn't trying to conceal a pregnancy. She didn't know there was one. "I never knew that I was pregnant," she told the progressive magazine Mother Jones. Amid the conservative movement to ascribe rights to embryos and fetuses, new research by the non-profit Pregnancy Justice Organisation reveals that between 2022 and 2024, at least 412 women across the country, the United States, like Catherine, been charged for crimes related to their pregnancies. When state legislatures and courts begin to frame a fetus as a person, any action a pregnant woman takes that can endanger her pregnancy is tantamount to child neglect, they said. Pregnancy Justice found that this was the case even when women didn't even know the child existed, even if the fetus was unharmed, even if the only substance it identified was marijuana. The full article by Abby is available at allthews.motherjones.com. And finally, the heavy metal legend Rob Halford from the highly influential metal band Judas Priest has quietly tied the knot, according to the gay magazine Instinct. It wasn't the typical rock star extravaganza, no over-the-top stadium show or no red carpet, just a beautiful, simple ceremony by a cactus with a few close friends and the love of his life. The moment, though intimate, was a celebration that felt both profoundly personal and unapologetically Rob Halford. In a candid interview with Jake Shears on Queer the Music podcast, Halford shared the story of how he and Thomas, who's from Alabama, finally decided to make their relationship official. After years of asking and years of Thomas pushing back, Halford got an unexpected surprise. "Let's get married," Thomas said, but on one of their night walks. And without missing a beat, Halford rushed home and called a pastor. Now, Mr. Halford was married in front of two witnesses, but he's been openly gay since coming out in 1998 on MTV. In the interview with Jake Shears on the Queer the Music vlog, Mr. Halford spoke about his frustration with how America remains deeply homophobic, but also sounds notes of optimism when he looks at how far society has come in the 50 years since he started heavy metaling back in the early 1970s. Judas Priest remain a highly influential metal band and inspired such greats as Iron Maiden and Guns N' Roses. And at 74, Mr. Halford is one of the scene's grand old men and carries much authority. That's news for this week. We'll be back with more next time. But if you have a thirst for LGBTQIA plus news, check out our website at shoutoutradio.lgbt and be sure to keep in touch with local queer media near you. For Shoutout News, I've been Terry Starr.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Oh, I like
that
one.
You were loving that song. Like, that's singing every word.
I think I think
you know every word.
Yeah, but I've only listened to it twice.
Really?
I'm not quite sure how that's happened.
It's imprinted on you.
Yeah, I think it really has. But shout out to Ray.
Is it one you like?
Yes.
It is. Oh, I picked a land you like. Oh.
And that was what we were talking about earlier. See, that was that. Wasn't it paying off? Yeah, no, to be fair. Like,
did you see her perform that on Graham Norton, though?
No,
I didn't. Me? No, I didn't.
You've got to watch it. It's really good.
Yeah, well, you're gesturing in my direction. Did you see Darren perform?
Yeah, that was like...
actually,
this was your stage and you did before.
Yeah, I was like, anyway.
Yeah, I really want to see on Graham Norton, actually. I love Ray. She's gorgeous in terms of inside and out.
Yeah, and her first track, it was such a success, she had a complete blank to write other stuff. So she ended up having a bit of a break because she just couldn't think of anything else to write.
Fair
enough. That's what she's saying on the Graham Norton show.
It reminds me of like Adele when she's like, "Well, I've sung all out of my heartbreak, so
yeah,
I'm no longer heartbroken." So
I mean, that is kind of her thing, though, isn't it?
It is. It's like you left me, and now I will sing about it.
Yeah.
She's a British. Well, no, I was going to say she's a British Taylor Swift, but she's dead. Well,
she's dead.
In terms of like talking about her heartbreak and like...
Yeah.
Oh, don't give me that look, Jo. Okay.
Well, Jo, I don't think Jo was expecting to talk about this when they agreed to come.
I know.
Welcome to the Taylor show, Swift. Jo.
So, yes, let me introduce our guests because I'm super excited to have them in the show. We are... Joined.
Welcome back, actually.
Yeah.
It is a welcome back, yeah.
Only a few weeks ago, we couldn't get enough. So we're joined by Dr. Jo Hartland. They are an ex-NHS doctor, and is now working in academia, and it happens to be the same area that I work within as well. Jo, I don't want to introduce you. I want you to introduce you because you do it so fabulously.
Oh.
Yeah, so would you like to give us a little amuse-bouche of interview?
Yeah, okay, so who am I? So, yeah, my name's Jo, pronouns they, them. I trained as an NHS doctor. And since 2018, when I left the NHS, I've been working in academia. And I'm now an associate professor of health justice education, which means that I look at how do we think about and talk about what affects healthcare in terms of inequalities, but more about what is injustice. And injustice speaks to like how do systems of power manifest and how do we then contradict or push back against those systems when they hurt people.
When you talk sometimes, just I just love it. Yeah, it's so hard.
I was like, yes, keep going.
Please do. So we haven't just brought Joe in because we, you know, because I like to hear them talk.
Do you just want us to go get like a storybook or something?
Yeah, honestly, yeah. I feel like David Attenborough has someone in
Oh, I feel like my shows would be so much more depressing.
Okay, but we haven't just brought Joe because, you know, we love the way they speak. It's generally because we wanted to tackle a key topic that has been brought up, and that is the Supreme Court ruling. It was FWS judgment that applies
Calm
to the
down,
equality.
Steph. Calm down.
Yes. Hold them back. No. So yeah, it applies to the Equality Act. And Jo and I really thought that it was a really important topic, and Steffi was the one that really inspired it because, you know, Steffi said we need to talk about this and we need to be raw about how we talk about it. So why are we having this conversation, in your opinion, Jo? Like, why does it matter?
So I think that's a good question, because I think it will matter in different ways to different people. And when we were thinking about why did we, you and I, want to bring this together today, I think one of the things we wanted to think about is, in terms of the Supreme Court ruling and the subsequent Equality and Human Rights Commission's guidance that will be coming out, which will be informed by that ruling, what we wanted to think about was, well, what does it mean for people? How do we understand the differences and the words that are being thrown around, like sex and gender, and why are these important? But also for those listening who want to be allies to the trans community, how can you do that in terms of this ruling and the upcoming guidance that might be appearing?
Excellent. I think our first question really should be, what is sex and what is gender and what is the difference?
Yeah. So that's a good question. And it's not an easily answered question in some ways. In some ways, it is a very easy to answer question. And the Supreme Court ruling has not made this any clearer, despite kind of what we might have heard from politicians. It's actually really muddied the water, because the Supreme Court ruling does relate to how we define sex under the Equality Act 2010, which is a very important piece of legislation that creates a framework of protecting people from discrimination in law. And so redefining sex within that has entered us into a very difficult space of what this means. So if we first think about gender is a socially constructed concept. When we think about gender, it can vary across both time and culture how people present their gender. Gender tends to think about our internal self and our identity. How do we relate to the concept of either man, woman, or something that maybe is in between, which is how I would put myself in that space as well. We also have our gender presentation. That's about how we present our gender to the world around us. So that might be makeup, nails, it might be your hair, it might be even down to the way you talk or the way you dress. And the way that we present ourselves in the world around us means that gender is actually a negotiation, because it means that people interpret your gender based on your behaviors and the way you present yourself. Now, sex is different to that. Sex tends to refer to the biological way in which we look at how human bodies are made. Now, unfortunately, with the Supreme Court ruling, what we've ended up with is looking at genitals at birth being a way that we would define someone's sex as either binary male or binary female. And I think that's where one of the big issues, especially for academics and for healthcare staff, is our concerns lie, that that is a misunderstanding of what sex is on a very complex biological level.
Mm. And genuinely, some people are born with both as well, so it's never clear-cut.
Yeah, so we have sort of under the spectrum of sort of typically male and typically female, you have a spectrum of what would be called intersex, or what was previously known as disorders of biological development. And that's not something I would encourage people to use, because we don't want to think of people as disordered, especially since, you know, in many times people won't know they're intersex unless there is a reason that that impacts on their health. So the truth is, we don't actually know how many intersex people there are in the population, because for many people, although it can affect your external genitals, it can be chromosomal, it can be hormonal. So the ways in which intersex manifests and the ways that we experience sex as a biological thing is complex. And just as like gender is socially constructed, so is our understanding of sex. All of science is just us attempting to explain the world around us and apply rules to it.
We don't truly know the complexity of it, do we? It's not like we have gone and looked at 8 billion people and said, being able to say your XX and your XY.
No.
So why are we trying to put this binary kind of terms to this like kind of complicated topic, do you think?
So I think trying to put binary terms onto quite a complex topic can mean that what we end up with, I think you have to think about what is the motivation, right? Like, why do people want to do that?
That's what I'm saying.
And I think there's a simplicity element to it. People want it to be simple. But I think we also have to remember that gender is hugely important in society, because we have massive inequality based on gender. We know that we have gender pay gaps. We know we're seeing a rise in the expectations for women to have certain roles in society, the trad wife thing online, like all of these things. Gender is actually very important to kind of a capitalist, not to enter into like a really anti-capitalist rant, which I can do at a second. But it has a very important role within capitalism, right? Gender is important. And we didn't really set those rules until the evolutionary scientists, kind of Darwin's era, where they started to really lock into what is a man and what is a woman, and within that also create racial hierarchy as well. And that's where a lot of problems started coming in, when we see bad science informing quite big social impact.
And how does this actually relate, I guess these definitions relate to the Supreme Court ruling? Because I know that they tried to define the term sex, didn't they? And because they wanted it to be binary.
Yeah, so there's a very long and complex and really meaningless statement that they made as part of the ruling, which basically says it is an acknowledgement that sex is a complex issue, but we are just referring to man and woman, and that is all there is. There is nothing else, and this is a biological thing based on your genitals at birth. That's really what it came down
and
to within
the
ruling.
It does fly in the face of what a lot of Europe's done. It's gone the other way.
Yes, yeah. And I think this is part of in my opinion, and this is, I think, a concern amongst many other people, is that this is leaning into what we would call biological essentialism, which is looking at how people's biology defines everything about them. And it's a very simplistic view of that as well, which is even more worrying, because that means that we're ignoring possibly a very large percentage of the population. For instance, if we think about intersex people, we don't know how many intersex people there are in the populations. There are some admittedly controversial estimates that it could be as many as there are people who are ginger in the population. So because we don't test for intersex, and it can manifest across many different chromosomes, genes, and also your hormone profiles, we don't know how many people there are, unless often it's a fertility issue that brings them to a doctor who will do tests and say, that's strange, these hormones don't quite line up with my expectations of what they would look like.
Joe, can I just ask,
yeah,
do you think, in your opinion, that intersex people have been thrown under the bus so that the radical right can actually get at trans women?
Yeah, so I think there's like a broader picture here. I think intersex people have 100% been thrown under the bus, and I think that The thing that is interesting and sad about that is that they've consistently been thrown under the bus when it comes to healthcare. You know, the surgeries that are performed on intersex young people to give them genitals that align, that is really worrying. And also, I think that when we think about the broader spectrum, so you're saying the sort of far right agenda there, trans women are a target within that. But actually what trans people represent when we think about the far right agenda, trans people represent not only joy, but autonomy over body. And autonomy over body in healthcare is a really important concept, because when we start questioning who has the right to make decisions about their body, trans people are a great example of this. When we remove trans people, the second thing we hear coming up in that conversation is, well, what about reproductive rights? Are we sure everybody should have access to reproductive rights in that way? And so I think it is targeting trans women, but I think it's part of a broader picture of we want more control over bodies. We want the state to have influence over body.
Mm. And I guess this is... this. Thank you, Andy. And my little assistant. I'm not my little assistant. My assistant.
Little assistant.
Yeah, no, anyway, so, sorry, everyone. But yeah.
Sorry, Liz. I was just putting the microphone back in front of her face so you could actually hear her.
Yeah.
In case you wonder what I was doing. It wasn't anything sordid.
No, nothing. So yeah, like, so this kind of ignores intersex individuals, and it creates this, like, level of unsafety for trans men and women.
Mm.
But I'm really interested to know how this relates to the Equality and Human Rights Commission, and where they kind of come into this story, because it just feels so layered and complicated. Mm. You know, no, when especially at our university, like, no one knew what was really going on. They just, you know, it was such complicated conversations, but no one could understand it. So could you be, yeah, clear about what you think the EHRC... is going to come with?
To be honest, I can't be clear with what they're going to come out with, because I don't think any of us 100% know. What we know is that the interim guidance, when it came out in relation to how the Supreme Court ruling could be implemented within businesses and spaces, we felt that it was very restrictive and that encouraged what the Supreme Court ruling didn't necessarily say, which was that you should segregate services based on people's assigned sex at birth. And that isn't really what the court ruling said. It said that least restrictive goals should be done in order to achieve specific outcomes. And so that means we don't have to default to this idea of we don't have people like this in this space. However, what we are worried about with the EHRC's guidance that's due to come out, so we have interim guidance and then we've had a consultation period. There's lots of concerns about how that consultation was run and how those results are being analysed. But what we're worried about is the restriction on services for trans people and where that leaves them in terms of accessing basic facilities, but also just the joys and, you know, the normal things that people should be able to access in life.
But something you said to me yesterday really, like, boggled my mind is you said that, you know, if, say, if we do create this binary system and someone does have, you know, an accessible toilet, you know, that someone does go into, it leads to you questioning why they're using that toilet, especially if they're presenting as a, like, a trans woman is presenting fully as a, well, as, yeah, it's presenting as a woman and someone sees them presenting as a woman, but they're going into this bathroom, like, why don't you just use the women's bathroom? So then it's kind of forced outing of people, and that's quite dangerous.
It also goes the other way, isn't it? Yeah. There have been more male presenting lesbians who have been targeted and said, "You're trans, get out of this bathroom." And they're like, "No, I'm not. I'm
fit." So many people I've dated
have been told to get out of the bathroom because they look like a boy by other women, and you're like,
and that's the beauty standard they're holding against themselves.
It's based on someone's heteronormative perception of what a woman
and
should
how gender
like.
Should be performed, right? Yeah. So that is unsafe.
Yeah, and I think the important thing to also recognise that is how gender should be performed against, like, a white supremacist ideal, right? In that, like, beauty standards are white beauty standards. So that's why things like body hair are often looked down on. Like, you know, this is why there's a lot of cultural shame about different issues. So I think you're right. You know, one of the outcomes of this is the forced outing of people. But it is also, as you said, the fact that it won't just be limited to impacting trans people or be impacting anybody whose gender presentation does not fit within a very rigid norm. And I think that comes earlier about, Steph, to your question about, like, the far right's goals and that idea of reinforcing certain hierarchies and expectations of what families and women and men should look like and expect to be like.
You alluded to people of colour being targeted. There's somebody on Big Brother. She's a black woman and she's bold. And she's being targeted. And you're trans. I guess the highest profile one is Brigitte Macron, who's actually having to go to the States to the court. Now, why would she need to do that? That is crazy.
I think she's proving a point.
She is proving a point. Now,
a black woman called her out, which is even more frustrating for me because I'm like, we've been through so much as a people. Yeah. Like, we've been called, you know, primitive and, like, not far advanced. And, like, calling other people out for something that, you know, is nothing to do with us. And I think that, nothing to do with Candice, at least.
And I don't think it matters, though, about the colour of her skin. She's just looking for hits.
But it does to me, though, because as a black woman, I think, like, because of our history and what we've been through and how we've been kind of disregarded as part of womanhood, like, look at the suffragette movement, all those kinds of movements, like, it does affect me because I feel disappointed that she could be bringing such an awful...
Well, I know what you mean because it's a bit like, it makes me a little bit embarrassed to be a gay man when you've got people like Wes Streeting, you know, cancelling all the support for trans people.
So if we take that into, like, a broader kind of scale, there's been writing, right, on this kind of topic. So the politics of oppression talk about how, like, one of the easiest ways out of an oppressive paradigm, out of being someone who is oppressed, is to oppress another person. Don't look at me, look at that shameful person. And in that way, you're never actually welcomed into the main powerful group, right? But you become less of a target. And I think, you know, we are seeing that. And we have seen that with, you know, early sort of the early gay liberation movement did leave out trans people and it left out people of colour in particular, right? Those movements were not a consistently liberal and open and community-driven space. They had certain functions and they served certain purposes. So I think we're just seeing, unfortunately, that same thing that's playing out.
Yeah, and I guess I really want to move to the point where, you know, a lot of our listeners might be allies or, you know, trans people themselves, but we want to speak a little bit to the allies because, you know, I want to take care of my friends who are trans and trans non-binary, trans women, trans men. And yeah, what are some of the ways in which we can do that and make sure that they feel safe?
Yeah, so I'll give some answers and Steph, I want to invite you if you want to also chip in on those because, you know, although I use they, them pronouns, I wouldn't necessarily describe myself as trans. I come under the umbrella, so please add if you think I'm losing anything here. But I think for me, one of the first things, if you are a cis person and you want to ally yourself to the trans community, I think one of the exercises that you can do immediately is think about what gender means to you. Think about why is it important to you? And also, what does it feel like when you feel good about your gender? Because we all do gender-affirming things, whether that's the way that we dye our hair, the way that we dress, the way that we present ourselves. Something will make us feel good about ourselves. And
I'm on the radio tonight and I put aftershave on because wanted to feel good about myself.
Exactly. And so we often talk about in trans healthcare, we talk about this idea of like... we want to minimize dysphoria, but that's a really weird thing to focus on because actually what we should be talking about is maximizing euphoria, right? Gender euphoria matters. Cis people get to experience it all the time. I think the other things you can be thinking about are what are the assumptions I make based on how people look? Challenge that. So if you're thinking, I think that person is this, why? Does it matter? Is it any of your business? And how is that being driven? What is the sort of things that are driving you towards that decision? And I think practical things that you can do, speak to trans people in your life. Ask them and give them the power to say, this is what I would find really helpful. And that might mean, actually, it'd be really helpful if you don't mind coming to the toilet with me when we're out on a night out, because then at least I've got somebody with me.
We all forget we've all got unisex toilets at home.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the be all and the end of it is even if you don't want to think all of that, which is really good advice to do, what harm are they doing to you? What actual harm are they doing to you? I mean, I've been somewhere where the ladies like has either been broken or had a queue of 40 people, and because gents don't use cubicles, there's 6 cubicles in there, and all the gents are going in and having a pee at a urinal. So we just go, women, come in, use it, because they're all dying for a pee, and they've got a queue of 30. No one cares.
I mean, what I would say is when I was younger, I used to go to rugby matches with my dad. I had short hair as a child, and obviously, as you're an 8-year-old, you're quite nondescript. And the queue for the women's, like you said, would be 30 plus, whatever. And he went, just come in the men's. And I would just go in, and no one would mind because my hair was short, you know, and I was dressed in more boyish clothes, if you would. So,
It really doesn't matter when it comes down to it, but it does matter, I guess, from your, I guess, your friend's perspective and showing that, like, kindness and care.
And I think safety. Like, safety is really core there, right? Like, people, I think a lot of trans people are feeling very unsafe, and that is especially exacerbated if you are someone who isn't white, if you are somebody who maybe doesn't, in inverted commas, pass as well. So think about what you can do. Think about those smaller movements and smaller things you can do with friends, with family, but also bigger things. Write to politicians. There's a great scheme online that has a, you can buy a badge that says, maybe I'm trans, that you can, like, wear into toilets and things like that. So challenge these narratives when you encounter them, and don't let them sort of pass you by. If you're an ally, it means you do something, right? I get really annoyed when people are like, well, they're not a very good ally. I'm like, well, they're just not an ally then. You don't get to be a bad ally. You're just not an ally, right? Yeah. So don't give people the excuse.
Listen, we're literally, like, we've got about 20 seconds left
to
show. This is definitely something that's a hot topic at the moment, and we've had you back a couple of times. I'm sure we will have you back again.
Yeah, 23rd of October.
Before we completely run out of show, I want to say a big thank you to you for coming on, because it is a really hot topic, and it's something that, you know, is very hot on our radar. We do have to damp down the flames coming out of Steph every now and again, don't we?
I've not had a problem in the toilets, and I'm not going to stop using the ladies' room. I've been using them for 25 years, and I've not had an issue at all.
And we should point out, it's not illegal to use the wrong toilets anyway.
No,
never has been.
I like Cribs Man. Now they've got signs up now saying the cleaners in these toilets can be any gender.
Oh, right.
No, okay. all genders. So implying that there's more than two. But, absolutely brilliant.
But
sign.
If you do need any support, like, you do want to understand the ruling, transactual.org/knowyourrights is a really good resource to understanding what the ruling is. And, you know, it's been a brilliant resource for me.
Cool. Anyway, that's it for this week. Do keep up to date with us. You can listen again and find out all about us at Shout Out Online.
Go to shoutoutradio.lgbt and don't forget, get in contact if you'd like to get involved with this show.
Next week, guess what? We're getting all operatic. From myself, from Lara, from Adarin, from Steph, and from Terry. Say bye-bye, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.